Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In January, as the legislature started the second half of the biennium looking at how to change the way education is funded in Vermont, Bristol Representative David Sharp, chair of the House Committee on Education, said it was time to adopt a new approach.
This method of funding schools, this tax support of public schools, has lasted 20 years. That's twice as long as any funding system I recall in history. And so it's due for an overhaul.
Well, there is a potential change, but it's not exactly an overhaul, and not everyone's happy with it. And even the legislators who crafted it and passed it say it doesn't meet all their goals of transparency, accountability, and fiscal responsibility. We're going to talk about the plan today, which would shift some of the burden of education financing from the property tax to the personal income tax. And I'm joined by members of both chambers of the legislature and by a member of Governor Phil Scott's administration to share their perspectives. Senator Ann Cummings from Montpelier is Senate Finance Committee Chair. Nice to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Kai Sampson is Commissioner of Taxes. It's nice to have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
And Representative Janet Ansel from Calais chairs the House Ways and Means Committee. Nice to have you with us. Thank you for coming out here. You had to rush over here to the studio.
I did. We were almost in the middle of a vote, so I had to hurry. But thank you for having us.
Well, I appreciate you being here, especially because this bill that we're talking about is a House-passed bill, and it's in the Senate now. I believe it's still in your committee, is
oh,
it
yes.
not? Yes. So let's talk a little bit. This bill is a tax reform bill. It's much bigger than just education funding, but we're going to concentrate on this piece of education funding and changing a little bit of how education funding would be paid for in the state today so that we're not making everyone's head spin, including mine, with trying to go through all of H-911. So Representative Ansel, why don't you start by giving us the thumbnail sketch of the education funding changes in this bill?
Sure, I'm happy to. I do want to point out before I start, though, that you're right. This is a House bill, and what we have to do in the House is we sort of have to put the ideas together, and we go first, as I like to say, and then the Senate gets to react to what we do, and the administration has input as we're developing our proposal, as the Senate is developing its proposal, and, of course, at the end when we're sort of at the point of making sure that what we've done will be signed or will become law.
Do you point that out because you feel defensive in some way about it?
No, it's not defensive so much as the work of sort of crafting it in the first place, sort of deciding, you know, how far what we mean when we talk about reform, sort of what the goals are and how far we're going to extend our efforts to reform really does fall in the House. And it falls in the House because the Constitution says that that revenue bills have to start in the House. So
and then everybody else gets to respond.
And then everybody else gets to respond. So I feel pretty good about the work that we did. But it's I do also want to point out, we always understand that the Senate has a say and that the administration has a say. So going first also means kind of watching your work get criticized and get changed.
Yes.
No, it's fine. I like the position that we're in, and I obviously I find the work valuable and interesting, and I think that the bill we produced actually does meet a number of the goals that we set out. Our goals were, you know, simplicity, transparency, better connection between voters and their vote when they vote on school budgets, equity, and I always forget there's a fifth one, and I always forget it. It's just as important as the other four, so it'll come to me in a minute. And we wouldn't expect to accomplish any of those goals in the sense that we're going to fix it and it's never going to need to be reviewed again. But we do expect to make progress towards them, and I feel that we did with this bill. We spent the first couple weeks really just sort of putting every idea on the table, and the administration was also involved in that discussion. The idea is being the most important goal being
the fifth.
That's
here
coming
we go.
To me. being reducing reliance on the property tax and moving to a more direct income tax component. And that is a goal that I think many House members share, I think many members of the legislature share. When we campaign, certainly House members, we go door to door. When we talk to voters, that's frequently what we hear from voters. So that's been a goal in the House, I think in the legislature generally, for quite a long period of time. Of course, we have an income sensitivity program, so there's an income component. But for a lot of people, it's indirect, and people don't necessarily understand that the way they pay for education is based on their income. So we were wanting to make that connection more clear. And so I can go through all the details, but I'm going to pause.
Good. I'm glad you did. So let's get out one of the salient facts here, and then we can start going around the table and talking about some of these ideas. So basically, and this is a very simplified way of phrasing it, because again, it is complicated and there's a lot going on. But what you came out with in the end is shifting some of the burden of education funding from property tax bills to the income tax. And so you think that you could generate about $59 million in an income tax surcharge, and then thereby decrease the homestead property tax by the same amount. So it would be even across the board, although not even for each individual person, but even across the board in terms of revenue, by decreasing the homestead property tax and increasing, having a surcharge on the personal income tax. Does that sound, I have it right there?
That's a great description of it. That is what we did. We had talked about more money at different times. I think we were talking about an income component that was as big as maybe $140 million, $150 million. We ended up with the $59 million, and it does go directly into property taxes, but at the same time, we revised the way property tax rates are set for homestead, for residential property taxpayers. So when you combine those things, we do a comparison with what would have happened in fiscal 19, this coming fiscal year, if we didn't make a change, and compare that to the bill that we moved through the House. And for every town, the tax rate is either at its projected fiscal 19 level or below. But because we revised the way those rates are set, high-spending towns are closer to what they would have been in fiscal 19. Low-spending towns get more of a benefit.
Listeners, I want to invite you into this conversation as well. We're getting a lot of comments already from people who have thoughts on this, and some questions, and perhaps some ideas that need to be clarified about what this bill would or would not do. And if you have a question, because it is complicated, all education financing always is, and people have strong feelings about how to do it, we'd love to hear yours. You can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Or you can call 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. All right, Senator Cummings, you chair the Senate Finance Committee. So
yes.
This bill is now in front of you. What are
it
your thoughts?
Is. Well, the Senate is just working its way through. This is probably the largest and most complicated bill I've seen in all the years I've been chairing finance.
Even at the whole bill itself.
The whole
yeah.
bill.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in finance when we did Act 60. I do have one member that was. So it's a massive bill. We are walking our way through. We're starting with the section by section. We're getting the comparisons for the tax rates, and we're trying to figure out income classes, because for people of higher income in those towns, they're going to be paying significantly more, and we're trying to figure that out.
Right. That's one of the pieces of this legislation is
yes.
that people with higher income, the income, you know, it's taxed higher.
It is. It's a very progressive tax rate, which is a Vermont tradition. We're going to, you know, work our way through it. I think there is an interest has been for a time in the Senate of putting more income-based ability to pay funding into education. I think the concern, and we're going to look at it again, is that income taxes tend to be highly volatile. Every time you look at the state budget, which is income dependent, you can't start a school and find up, oops, your $2 million short this year, and you've got to let a few teachers go in September. Property taxes are stable, and so finding that balance is important so that schools can stay open.
Property taxes are stable, but if, as we were just talking about, so many Vermonters are paying property taxes using this income sensitivity program, wouldn't that volatility be somewhat built into even the property tax system?
Well, the towns get paid the full property tax.
That's right.
So the schools – and then the towns have to pay the schools first. So the schools are guaranteed. Once they vote their budgets, they're guaranteed their funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can go about their business. There's the state swallows, and because the state is obliged to contribute to the certain amount to the ed fund, so they are right now very stable. And I, you know, personally, I don't want to upset that.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I think my committee is scattered. There's a number of people who have said the state, the other part of this bill, the state will get a windfall of about $30 million from the federal tax cut bill.
Mm-hmm.
First part of this bill gives back that $30 million. There are more than one member of my committee says, well, why don't we give it back in the form of property tax relief? Just take the $30 million and reduce property tax rates. So we're working through it. The House has essentially twice the amount of time the Senate does because they work
Hey, they had to come up with the ideas.
They did. But then now we have to understand the idea.
That's right.
And we, you know, we basically are an afternoon committee. So we get a couple hours. We do work into the evenings as we get into it. But we're working our way through. I think there's interest. But again, we need the time to to understand what the House committee was thinking and to wrap our minds around it. So we're at that point.
Philosophically, do you agree with the approach?
I think I'd like the idea of going to a more getting some income tax, more money in there. If this is the best way to do it yet, I don't know. I think historically the Senate has been less inclined to be punitive to towns who spend more than the amount the state gives them. As I spent 2 years chairing the Education Committee, which was eye-opening for me, understanding what schools are facing and what challenges they have. And what we haven't really figured out is what is the right number to spend? And is the average the right number? But schools vote their budgets, and then we're kind of left with saying, well, you voted the amount of money. Now we've got to make you it costs less for you. So it's a difficult position to be in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, certainly, if nothing else, I think everybody agrees that this is complicated and there are a lot of different ideas for how to fix it. But then you come into the details and trying to get both transparency and fiscal responsibility and equity is really complicated. All right. So we've heard from Representative Ansel. We've heard from Senator Cummings. Kai Samson is also here, Commissioner of Taxes. Representative Ansel said the administration had some input at the beginning as these plans were being developed. So what are your thoughts now that the 911 is out there?
Well, on the positive, I would say that you started with Representative Sharpe's comments, and you know we're encouraged to see that there's widespread recognition that maybe it's time for some change, that we're not getting the results we need from or that we desire from this education finance formula in the system. And, you know, what we've seen in the last 20 years is that Supreme Court decision that compelled the state to work towards equity in raising education funds off the property tax has resulted in kind of that tax rate equity that most communities are, you know, generally have the same ability to raise that equal money. But what we have are wide disparities in spending across the state. So that may not be in the spirit of what the legislature and the state was trying to do. Was not trying to increase the disparity between schools. So that's something that I think everyone recognizes we need to fix. As far as what this bill does and the discussion about moving to more to income, I think, I have a different view of that and believe that to be a fact-based view, which is we are already very much reliant on income in our education funding. The general fund transfer is $320 million and growing every year. Half of the general fund comes from personal income taxes. So what this bill does is remove the general fund transfer, again, of which at least half can be attributed to personal income tax, so maybe $160 million, and replace it with $60 million of a direct income tax surcharge. But it doesn't lower anybody's income tax. In fact, it increases their income tax. And so I would challenge the idea that this is a reform that puts more emphasis on income. I would argue it actually does the opposite. As far as, does it achieve the goals? December 1, I published a letter, as I'm required to do by statute, that forecasts what the property tax rates are destined to be in the following year. And, we had some grave news in the fall that it was going to go up as much as 9.4 cents. What happened since then, we've got more favorable information, and that has been somewhat mitigated. And most importantly, and the governor's office is extremely appreciative of the hard work that school boards do to come in way below target, that target that he had set based on what he thought the economy could sustain. So now we're looking at like a 5 cent increase. And if we do nothing more on cost containment. But fundamentally, I think the issue here is, everyone can agree that the number one thing we hear are people complain about their property taxes. I don't think they wanted the solution to be lower my property taxes by taxing me the same amount elsewhere. And furthermore, another flaw is that, as we see it, is that you're not taxing the same people, so you're shifting. Not everyone's a homeowner. We have almost 100,000 renters in this state. They will be paying this tax without any corresponding reduction in their property taxes because their landlord pays their property taxes, and this bill does nothing to non-residential or landlord property taxes.
Although what it does do is base the tax, the surcharge, on somebody's income. So if you are a lower income renter, you would presumably be paying less of this than if you were a very high income renter. So it would be based more on what income you're bringing in, right? Does that not appeal to the administration?
It's a new tax. So, you're paying less. If you're a renter making $50,000 a year, you're paying less than a renter making $150,000 a year. But at the end of the day, you're paying a tax you've never been exposed to before directly like this. In law, and if you look at how we structure our renter rebate program, we certainly recognize that a person's rent that they pay has a component that's essentially covering the cost of the landlord's property taxes. So in that regard, there's an element of double taxation here. They're paying, I think by law in the renter rebate calculation, we attribute 21% of rent to property taxes. So now that person is paying 21% of their rent towards property taxes and a new income tax surcharge. The governor's been very clear. Vermonters can't afford additional taxes and fees, and that has driven a lot of the discussion around the education fund and property taxes. But the solution absolutely is not to take from one pocket in order to put it in the other. That's not reform.
I'm going to sort of think of this as opening statements. So we've got three opening statements here. And as I said, we have a lot of listeners and a lot of Vermonters who are really keen on jumping into this conversation. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's get all of our listeners into this conversation as well and sort of grapple with some of these ideas through the questions that they are sending us and calling in with. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're taking a look at how a tweak to the education funding formula is being received in Montpelier. We're talking with Kai Sampson, Tax Commissioner, Ann Cummings, Chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and Janet Ansel, Chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, which came up with this bill, H-911, which is now in Senator Cummings' committee. And lots of questions. Let's talk a little bit about renting, because that's what we were just talking about before the break. Several comments have come in on that. Megs says, since we currently employ income sensitivity into our school taxes, how does this bill improve on that? The point about renters being penalized in the H-911 plan is a concern. Renters are already contributing to the education tax through their rent payments. And Beatrice says, it seems that this bill is going to put a heavy increase on renters. Is there any thought on that? More people also thinking about renting. But, you know, what was your thinking in going through this, Representative Ansel, and thinking about what this might do to renters?
We're keeping the renter rebate program. I think that's important to say at the outset. So the renter rebate program, which is for renters whose household income is under $47,000, will stay intact. The surcharge rate for every taxpayer who has income is 0.1%. For married joint filers, up to $63,300. That's $63 a year. Most renters are under that income level. We've done some analysis, and I think it might be 75% to 80% of renters are below that level. So the $63, that's if you're at the top of that income scale. If you're at $40,000, your surcharge will be $40.
So you're looking at the demographics of renting here in Vermont as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, renters, of course, have kids in school. They don't, although I hear the commissioner and others saying that they pay property tax through their rent. We've done a lot of analysis on the renter rebate program, and really rents are market driven. When taxes go down, rents don't go down. When taxes go up, they go up if the market will bear it. But they don't go up automatically. And I briefly had a property that I rented out, and, you know, it just you basically ask what you think you can get. So I think I would disagree with the notion that renters pay property taxes. We do a renter rebate program to support low-income renters, and I think that's appropriate, and we're going to continue it. But the 0.1% for, maybe 80% of renters, I think is a reasonable amount. I think it's good for renters who do vote on school budgets to actually see that they are paying something directly into the education fund. So I think that.
So is it optics in some way? I mean, it's all, as Commissioner Sampson said, you know, in some ways it's just shifting money around, but presumably the same amount of money, although, as we said, not each individual will pay the same amount. But is it sort of like the optics of thinking about how you as an individual are contributing to the education fund?
One of the goals that we had when we started working on this is transparency, and I think that's the goal that we probably made the most progress in achieving. One thing we haven't talked about is our separating the general fund and the education fund. The commissioner touched briefly on getting rid of the general fund transfer, which, true, the general fund has a lot of income in it, but I bet people, when they pay their income taxes, don't think of themselves as paying for education. And as in replace that, we're dedicating 100% of the sales tax, or our recommendation is to do that, to education. So the sales tax, unfortunately, is one of our more regressive taxes, even though we exempt food and clothing. Income is not regressive. Income does reflect ability to pay. So I think that having a system that more directly puts income into our school funding moves us closer to ability to pay, and moves us to a situation where people will actually see what they're paying for education, and I think that's positive.
I'm going to read one more note here about renting, and then we can talk about other things as well. But somebody posting as South Burlington resident says, I was disappointed to read that H-911 will penalize renters and raise their taxes. We have several friends who are renters trying to save for a home. Besides increasing taxes for renters, shift to an income tax also seems like it could have the unintended consequence of encouraging more geographically mobile, higher-income residents to leave the state. It also seems like it could be a less stable funding source. Income often changes year to year, and thus the state could end up with the unpleasant surprise of not enough funds if it is a bad year. We got a note from the GOAT who really sort of boils it down to, I guess, the fundamental question that some people have here, saying, as a homeowner with no children, why should I pay any tax to educate someone else's child? That sounds a lot like communism. Commissioner Sampson?
I was hoping I wouldn't get that one.
I thought you might not want that one.
Well, I mean, we have to talk about the common good and, you know, economics and demographics. I did not come prepared to defend why we as a society should fund education and all that, although if you gave me a couple minutes, I could come up with a compelling reason with two children of my own. But they are the future. We are one society and we're working together. But,
fundamentally, you believe that we as a state, we as a society should be paying for all of our children to go to school. That is a fundamental belief that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up with two I'm the first American in my family. I grew up in a Dutch household where, you know, the expectation is or the funding is well beyond, K through 12. And I believe that's what everyone should be shooting for. And, you know, Vermont has a great public school system. We do not have, a very robust private school system that's competing with public school. I think people recognize they're getting good results out of their public school. So, absolutely. I went to public school in Vermont. My kids are in public school, so big fan of it. It's good quality stuff. Just back on this income discussion, I think it's also important just as a level setting to point out that in addition to the income tax that comes through the general fund transfer, I think a lot of folks don't realize that when we look at total education spending in the Ed Fund, only 27% of that currently comes from residential property taxes. So, I think we all have to pause a little bit before we say, let's move even more of that funding away from the local communities that are making these decisions and voting these budgets. I think connecting voters to their budgets and to their local schools is important, but shifting more of it, more of the consequence of that away from property taxes, behaviorally, I'm not sure that's the direction that we should be going in.
Did you not have input in this, though, at the beginning? I mean, that was one of the first things that Representative Ansel said. So why are we now at this point where – did they craft a bill that the administration knew it wasn't going to like, or did the administration sort of change its mind, or has there been a not very good communication system going on here?
Vehemently, no. The administration did not change its mind. We were given ample opportunity to comment on this bill, and it did change radically, a couple weeks before crossover, as Representative Ansel said. There was a much greater income component, and there was actually the elimination of the income sensitivity, or most of the income sensitivity program. The governor has been clear not only this year but for his entire term, no new taxes and fees. And our testimony on the direction and trajectory of this bill was clear that this looks a whole lot like a new tax and a fee when you're
– Even if it's revenue neutral.
Yes, because you have cohorts of folks that are going to be experiencing a new tax here, and we've concentrated on renters, but there are other cohorts as well that are of concern, which is non-resident investors in Vermont startups, pass-through companies. They will now face when they're looking at do I want to plunk another $1 million into the next Vermont brewery. And they're non-residents, they'll be subject to this income tax surcharge at the full high 1% if they're higher income folks. So there's concern about the, kind of muting the entrepreneurial environment in Vermont. And we have significant out-of-state investment in Vermont's entrepreneurial economy. And this does have an impact on that.
Well, then let me toss that to Senator Cummings, because, part of your job now is to figure out, of course, what your committee and then what the full Senate would like to see. But also you must be thinking about, do you send a bill to the governor's desk that you think or know he may veto? And then do you have enough support to override a veto? So how does what Commissioner Sampson is telling you affect your thinking?
Actually, usually when you're at this stage, you're working through how do you get to yes.
The governor's yes?
No. A yes where both sides, and there's pretty rough negotiations. With the just no, I'm having trouble for the first time actually trying to get my committee to focus. I have a couple members who are saying, look, if we do anything, the governor's going to veto it, so why bother? Trying to get people motivated to think through a very complex issue. We know we have to do something because the yield is in this massive bill. So isn't the reduction of the exemption of a larger portion of Social Security payments from taxation. There's a giving back $30 million. There's a lot of things in there we know we need to do, but it's been more difficult this year to get that. We actually spent a couple minutes listening to why the governor was not supportive of putting a tax on vapes, which are the new cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Like e-cigarettes.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've run stories about how kids are getting highly addicted. They can smoke in school because they're easy to hide. And they come in bubblegum flavor. And so it's that kind of a, why are we even discussing this, that I think is having a somewhat dampening effect. And
are you frustrated with the governor?
Yeah.
Janet Ansel, it looks like you're frustrated with the governor. You want to jump in here?
I actually wanted to jump in on the question about why bother. If we don't have a bill, if the bill is vetoed and we can't override the veto, we actually will keep $30 million of Vermont taxpayers' money that we didn't intend to raise and we didn't intend to raise from the people we're raising it from. The non-residential tax will stay roughly where it is, and the education fund will be in deficit $400 million, more or less.
That's a good why bother.
That's a really important why bother.
It is.
So I think it's really important that that everybody understand that they're not going to get everything they want. I already have not gotten all that I want. but I understand that there's an awful lot of give and take. But saying no way, no how isn't the way to get to a place. Isn't the way to get to yes.
Well, let's talk
a
little bit.
We have to have a bill.
Yes, and let's talk a little bit more about how to get to yes and other questions that listeners have coming right up. We're talking about an education financing bill that would shift some burden of financing education from property tax into income tax. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm talking today with three people in politics and who think a lot about taxes and who think a lot about finances and education. And it's helpful that they're here because they can answer some questions that you might have about education financing in Vermont and how it might shift. It's still not a done deal, certainly, by any means. It's passed the House, H-911, which is a big tax reform bill, and incorporates some changes in how we would do education financing, and it's now in Senate committee. And then, of course, we'll have to go to the governor at some point, and we'll see what happens. We're talking with Representative Janet Ansel, who's chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, Senator Ann Cummings, who's Senate Finance Committee chair, and Kai Sampson, commissioner of taxes. Let's go to Tom, who's calling in from Royalton. Hi, Tom. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me. In my position, I've been a long-term board member in Vermont and have had a lot of contact with members from around the state, board members, about this. And their concerns don't much so center around the contents of the bill, but the timing of the bill. So those board members aren't really disputing that something needs to be done. But the timing of it is actually questionable because almost every budget, board budget across the state has already been passed. And what they're proposing is to change how we fund our budgets that we just passed. So voters went to the polls and went to the town meetings thinking they're going to be taxed one way, where if this passes through, then they will actually be taxed another way. So we have concerns about that. I'd like to hear what your guests think about that.
Tom, before we go to our guests, do you sense in your community that homeowners and community members are worried about this, you know, that it doesn't feel like a wash to them? Because presumably if it's the same budget, you know, the amount of money isn't changing, but the amount of money and how it's coming out per person is what's concerning them?
I don't know how many people are truly aware of this, to answer it truthfully, but I'm having lived in my community for 22 years. If this passes through and we go to them and say, well, yeah, we were going to tax you one way, but now we're going to actually tax you a different way, I think they'll be outraged.
Interesting. So Tom says outrage. That's a pretty strong word. Representative Ansel?
Well, it is a strong word. I don't understand why people would be outraged if their taxes are lower.
And
for every community, the tax rate, the residential tax rate will either be lower or at the projected fiscal 19 level. This bill does not increase the residential rate for anyone.
But if I'm a person who would be in this hypothetical situation, a higher income Vermonter, and I own my house, and I did pass my school budget based on what I thought I was going to be paying in property tax. And now my property tax is lower, but in fact, my income tax is higher than the amount that I'm losing out of my or gaining in my property tax. So essentially, if I am now paying more, I might have made a different decision in my school budget, right?
I suppose it's possible, but the surcharge, which, you know, it's relatively small relative to how much we typically raise on income. For somebody at the higher income level, it's a blended rate, but the highest would be 1%. And it will be – it isn't actually paid until next year when you file your taxes. So it might affect withholding if you're a waged employee, or it would affect the estimated taxes you would pay. I don't know about the others here, but I don't hear people complaining about their income taxes. They complain all the time about their property taxes. And I have a hard time. I know that the timing issue is something that the School Boards Association has been very vocal about. I just have a hard time understanding why. I don't think that votes on budgets would be different this year if people had known that this bill was in the works. And in fact, there was a more radical change that was in the works when people went to town meeting to vote.
We did get a note from Brad who says transitioning to an income tax for part of the education fund will simply put more stress on an already challenged employment market. Vermont has the highest income taxes in the country as it is. We should put an asterisk on that because not entirely true. But Brad says adding to that makes zero economic sense. And, you know, Senator Cummings, we're talking about optics earlier. So, you know, right. The optics are for so many people that, yes, the income tax actually is high or the tax burden overall. And so, you know, to Commissioner Sampson's point, if this looks certainly it looks to the administration like a new tax. Could that be a problem getting it through?
We have always had trouble with our highest marginal rate, which is high. But you only pay that on a small portion of your top income, and you pay the lower rates. Most other states have a lower top rate, but you start paying that at something like $30,000, $40,000. So we may – if you just look at the top tax rate, but your tax bill is probably lower, that doesn't happen. And I know that they've collapsed the top two rates. We've been trying to do things that the Blue Ribbon Tax Commission said, trying to get that down. So it depends on which optics you look at, I guess.
Doesn't it always? Boy, I have to say I'm really interested to see what happens here as this moves through the Senate and then moves to the administration. And I appreciate the three of you not only for being here and spending time with us, but for trying to make it clear because, you know, you say to people we're going to talk about taxes and I think half the people their eyes glaze over and half the people know exactly what they want to say about it. So I really appreciate all three of you helping to clarify things today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
We spoke today with Kai Sampson, Commissioner of Taxes, Senator Ann Cummings from Montpelier, who's Senate Finance Committee Chair, and Representative Janet Ansel from Calais, who chairs the House Ways and Means Committee. And, of course, VPR will keep you posted on what happens with H-911 and all the other parts of it, too, that we didn't talk about today.